Our God is able. Hello, this is Darko Stefanovic from Walla Walla College School of Theology. Welcome to Probe, our weekly radio program that focuses on biblical topics and discussions. Today we are continuing a series of topics based on one of the most important books of the Bible, the Book of Daniel. To help us explore this book, I have invited two of my colleagues to join me in the discussion, Dr. Dave Thomas, Dean of School of Theology, and Ken Bramlett, a doctoral candidate at the University of Toronto, Canada, who specializes in archaeology and teaches for us here on campus. Welcome to both of you, and thanks for joining.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Today's topic is the third chapter of Daniel's book. In this chapter, we have a story of King Nebuchadnezzar, who set up an image or a statue and invited all of his dignitaries throughout his empire to come and bow down or to worship that statue. The three young Hebrews who are present there, and we are not sure that they were the only ones present there, but at least three of them, they refuse to do it. And in doing so, they show an incredible courage, an act of courage. Well, they are punished, but God performs a miracle so that at the end they are saved. And this all influences the king so that in the end of the story, he's changed and his pride turns once again into something that is opposite. And in this case, it is praise to God so that the king becomes the patron of that God whom he had challenged in the beginning of the story. So the first thing that I would like us gentlemen to discuss is, are there some links between the previous story that we discussed last week and this one? What are some of the common elements, and are there some differences too?
Well, the image carries over, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Previous chapter, we had the image made out of several different metals. And then the image is slightly transmogrified. When it comes into this chapter, it's all gold.
Mm-hmm.
And also the personages are different. Here we have the three friends, whereas last week we had Daniel.
Daniel. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what about the person who erects the statue? In the case of the previous chapter, we have a statue shown to King Nebuchadnezzar in a dream. But the part of the dream that talks about an everlasting kingdom, I'm reading from chapter 2, verse 44. This is how it's described. In the time of those kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom. Well, this is in contrast to chapter 3, isn't it? Who is it who sets up in chapter 3?
Well, Nebuchadnezzar is attempting to anyway.
And probably as we find this word gold in chapter 3, that the statue was made of gold, it may have been made of clay and coated in gold, but it looked a statue of gold. Does that remind us of Daniel's words in the previous story, "You, O king, you are the head of gold"? So why would Nebuchadnezzar erect a statue like this one?
Well, I think one possibility is he didn't like the flow of history that was revealed to him in the previous chapter, so he wanted to rewrite it so that his kingdom was the everlasting one.
Good.
That's a possibility anyway.
Yes, so it was either his idea or the ideas of the people around him that Babylon is gold and should remain as such, should be remain the power in the world forever.
So should we understand this as a great act of rebellion against the God of history?
It's possible.
It's possible.
Especially when we look at some details of this story, we find the king basically challenging the God of the three young men in verse 18. He says, just to make sure, actually it's verse 15 where it says, "Then what God will be able to rescue you from my hand?" So there is another point at which the king challenges the God.
Yeah, and that's actually a very arrogant statement on his part, isn't it?
Yes.
No, you suppose some of that's a reaction though, to the talk around the palace. Surely the story of the dream had gotten out, and probably beyond the palace even. And so now Nebuchadnezzar wants to reaffirm his own position. And this is part of his
Do you think it's possible that some of his... Well, I guess he's a sovereign enough being that he probably didn't need to concern himself with the requests of others if he didn't want to. But I wonder if some of the rest of his government officials didn't want some kind of statement from him. Look, Nebuchadnezzar, let's get done with this other version of history. We're working on a kingdom forever of our own.
And now all these dignitaries are assembled, the music is there, the herald goes to proclaim. And was that an embarrassing situation when suddenly there are some people who do not comply with his orders?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think when you read the text, it almost seems like Nebuchadnezzar could not believe what he saw.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Who reported that to him? The text says the Chaldeans. What did we learn about them in the previous chapter? Well, they were in trouble, weren't they? Because they were unable to explain the dream to the king.
Yeah, yeah.
And God had saved their lives through Daniel's intervention. Now, is this the way in which they say thank you?
Well, obviously they didn't die then, did they? They weren't killed.
They are well and alive in chapter 3.
Yeah. The shocking thing for them, I think, before was the usual protocol would be, you know, to interpret a given dream that was told to you. And here, this hadn't happened. Now they feel comfortable again, mm-hmm. enough, I suppose, in their positions to try to forget about what happened and remove these reminders of this embarrassment.
Mm. Another interesting detail of the story is that as soon as this is reported to King Nebuchadnezzar, he becomes furious, he's angry, and yet he's able to control himself. He talks in a very diplomatic way to the three young men, and he is willing to give them another chance.
Yeah, you know, that always amazes me, because I think it indicates that Nebuchadnezzar must have been very warm-hearted toward Daniel and his friends, because otherwise he would have just been done with them immediately, I think.
And in the previous story, he did the same for Daniel. He didn't want to give any more time to the rest of the wise men, but when Daniel approached him to ask for more time, that was granted to him. Mm-hmm. So these are interesting details to connect the stories that are found here. And I must tell you that not all interpreters of the book of Daniel, as you know very well, agree with this idea that the stories are interconnected. But there are people who think that they are very much separated, and that Daniel needs to be introduced or reintroduced in chapter 2. We do have some connectors here in the stories. The words of the three young men before the king are well known by the readers of the Bible on the one hand, and they are very problematic on the other. This is what they say, beginning with verse 16. O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to save us from it. And he will rescue us from your hand, O king. But even if he does not, we want you to know, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you have set up. Why are these words disturbing to some commentators? Is this a belief in God's supreme power? Is there a place for doubt here that God will intervene in behalf of his people?
Well, brings up the whole issue, doesn't it, of how does God interact with history? The role of miracle, what is miracle, and do we see it in our lives? I think this particular story is important for so many times in history. I mean, it was valued again in the Seleucid persecutions, the 2nd century BC, Roman persecutions, the Christian church in the 2nd century AD, the medieval period, so many times, and yet well within the story, this miraculous salvation event, there's this reminder that, look, God doesn't always step in. So how do we relate to that? I think that is a very central issue.
I agree with that very much, because it balances basically this strong element of miracle that we find in the story, warning us before we learn about the miracle that these miracles do not need to happen every time, and that there have been many times in history that they when they did not occur, when the righteous did suffer, even punishment of death.
Mm. See, I find myself quite captivated by the words of those young men because they are full of bravery and conviction. You know, you think of what courage it must have taken to stand up against this great monarch of ancient times who could summarily order your death. And yet they do this, believing that God, they basically said, we don't need another chance. it's not going to change our minds.
Then we come to the miracle. It's actually three miracles in one, a triple miracle. And this is how the text describes it. In Nebuchadnezzar's own words, look, I see four men walking around in the fire, unbound and unharmed, and the fourth looks like a son of the gods.
Mm.
So more than one miracle takes place here. And God intervenes in behalf of the young man. And because of that, Nebuchadnezzar cannot act differently than just to acknowledge in front of all these dignitaries from his empire that the God of the three young men is more powerful than the flames themselves, than this furnace that was heated seven times.
Mm-hmm.
So what do we learn from Nebuchadnezzar's attitude here as found at the end of the chapter? He used to challenge God when he said, what God will be able to rescue you from my hand? What does he say now about the God of Daniel?
He praises him. I think Nebuchadnezzar has several of these realization mm-hmm. events, these mm-hmm. epiphanies, but he tends to forget. But he seems to be open a number of times to at least hearing about God.
And he's also in a big hurry to require everybody else to line up with his discoveries, too.
So remains autocratic. He remains
autocratic. I learned about God, so the rest of you.
That's right, yes. And what is interesting is that the distinguishing mark for this God, the God of the three young men, as described by him in verse 29, is, he says, no other God can save in this way.
That's right, yeah.
So, time and again, he witnesses the power of a God who can save like no other God.
Yeah.
And at the end of the chapter, the three young men are promoted by the king, aren't they?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So everything turns out well for them. However, as we come close to the end of this story, we are reminded once again that deliverances and miracles like this one do not happen every time. Well, the question is here, can miracles create faith and turn an unbeliever into a believer? Most likely the answer is not, because miracles, they can affirm only someone's faith.
Mm.
But faith is a gift from God. I would like to thank both Dr. Dave Thomas and Ken Bremlett for their contributions. Next week again, they will be my guests. Please join us next week as we continue to explore the messages from the biblical book of Daniel. Thank you all for tuning in. For Probe, I'm Zdravko Stefanovic.
You've been listening to Probe, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla College and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you may call 509-527-2194 or email probe@wwc.edu. Join us again next week at the same time for Probe.